Thank you. I want to thank everybody for reading. I'm still down at it. And once again, we're here for the 11 step meeting. And for my first speaker this evening, I will give you Linda.
I asked him if he could go.
My first speaker will be Joe.
Hey, family, my name is Joe, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. I have to say this, that I was sitting there feeling anxious, and the more people that came in here, the more anxious I became. I have a sponsor who just walked in there, and he told me two things. He gave me some directions, which is better than a suggestion. He said, Joe, don't ramble. And remember, you talk softly, so talk loud enough to be heard. I'm not as anxious or as nervous as I was. I recognize that this man is a blessing for someone to think enough of me to share about anything. With all the information I've garnered and the plans on my saying something that would endear you to me or endear me to you, what I come to understand is that growing spiritually, what need to be said will be said if I depend on a higher power. I say this for me, that recovery wouldn't be possible without depending on a higher power. I'm a person who suffers from a lot of addictions and flaws. And a flaw is nothing more than a sin act upon. So what I do know, or beginning to know more about than a lot of literature says, is how I am and how this step applies to me. Number one, I had to recognize that, man, I had no power. And the most important part about this is the honestness of which I make this revelation, is that for all I thought that I could do, it never turned out right. A little about me, I'm 53 years old and I used for a lot of years. A little more about me is that I had a God of my understanding as a child. At least I thought I did, but it wasn't my God. And the thing about this step is that they tell us to form a relationship with a power greater than yourself, not no one else's. What's been given to me today, I know no one can take from me, because every time I talk about a higher power, I get a feeling inside that replaced that other feeling when I was in my active addiction that made me want to cry out in pain and misery and sorrow and say, God, please take this pain out of my chest. I used long enough and hard enough to feel that I wasn't worthy of calling on a God. I used long enough to come to a point of surrender. And now surrender is, according to the literature, is a heartfelt belief in the fallibility of me being a human being. Equally is heartfelt that a power greater than myself can relieve me of this feeling. We're talking about an obsession. So when we talk about the 11th step in prayer and meditation, what had to happen is a process. I had to get past this obsession of being so self-centered that in the third step I started finding to understand that there was just a chance that there was something that would relieve me of this addiction. And just by chance, there was a power that knew better than myself. Now getting to the 11th step through the prayer and meditation, and I'm only talking about my experience, is that part of this process was, man, the honesty to understand and recognize and say who I exactly was. I had to recognize myself for my faults with honesty, and I had to recognize myself with some of my good points. So which means is that I had to be open and honest enough and willing enough to allow someone to strip me bare where I stood naked and for me to accept me just who I was and how I was. Until I accept the fact that I am who I am and how I am, then recovery is impossible. As I've come back around and I come in and out of these rooms and I read the literature and I do have a sponsor and I study, there's a lot of revelations to be made. I had to surrender. In spite of all the flaws that are still in me, the most tangible part of that is that I am living better today than I've ever been able to live in my whole life. So if it sometimes seems like my voice may seem to be a little teary-eyed, it's joy. In the 11th step, we're talking about a relationship. And we're not talking about a relationship with another man or another female. We're talking about a relationship with a spirit that has all power. I recognize this spirit rescued me when I cried out in pain and said, God, please help me, because I can't take this any longer. Surrender itself is not enough for me to stay clean. I had to not only surrender, but I had to get to a point where in spite of the fears and the doubts, I had to go on in spite of myself. You told me that I was a very fearful person. From my own experiences as I'm growing spiritually, because not only am I a human being, I'm a spiritual being, that number one, fear and faith won't live in the same house peaceably. All along, I have to remain willing. Because if I'm unwilling to have a change to come in my life, then I'm not going to get anywhere. My prayers are simply my talking to the God of my understanding. The meditative part is me listening for the answer. So what am I listening for? I'm listening for God's will for me to be done. Paradoxically, step number one tells me I'm powerless. The 11th step says I can gain some power. But whose power? I thank God to have a sponsor that teaches me, and literature teaches me that I'm not asking for power for myself. I'm asking power from a loving and caring God to do what with? Not my will, but to do His will. I have to say this. I'm not only recovering from drugs, I'm recovering from using a bad spirit. A spirit will always need a body to work through. And I had the perfect body. Today I have a perfect spirit. And I call it God. There are those who are doubters about spirituality and God, but for me, I'm only talking about myself. In the 11th step, what has happened for me is that I've been able to get past a lot of fear that I have. So which means I had to gain some courage. And we're talking about a different type of courage. And the courage comes from doing over and over and keep coming back. The courage I had to gain was in spite of the fear that I felt, I continued to go on in spite of. It's similar to closing down and standing on the railroad track and you telling me, Joe, get off the track because the train is coming. And all I say is, huh? That's the willingness, and I'm open to hear you tell me something which will save my life. Through my prayers. Being a newcomer, I couldn't fathom being able to say a prayer and being relieved from pain. So there was the doubt. And believe me, I tried all kinds of prayers. But what they have taught me and what I've been taught is that, man, I don't have to spend a half an hour on my knees and carry out this long dissertation trying to imply that I don't know where I am, trying to bargain for specific outcomes for specific purposes. I simply say, God, please allow me to align my will with yours, and your will be done. I'm not a perfect speaker, but what I do have is my experiences. My experience has taught me that from out of the darkness, I've stepped into the light, and if I want to continue to stay in the light, then I must follow a higher power and grow spiritually. At the end of that is that with relief being granted to me, I have to understand that, like, man, one of the things that I can ill afford to do is to misuse this gift. I can be a self-righteous person. I can feel that I'm better than you. But what I do every time that I do this is that anytime I put another individual down, I don't give this individual an opportunity to feel like he can obtain a better way of living. We have to feed off of each other and gain some courage. Being stripped naked. In that situation is that I'm able to look at me and accept me for just how I am. That's the only way to recover is going to stick. What you taught me is that I don't have to be this intellectual giant or the guru. And for those of you who don't know me, my name is Joseph. I am not Saint Joseph. I tend sometimes to be a little stiff. And I feel that anxious is coming back. But just stay attached. Because I have a response out there. My meditation. I can't tell an individual how to meditate. What I simply do, I get it in a quiet state. And I do the best I can. I focus on, God, what is your will today for me? This is a process, and at first it was arduous at best because my attention span didn't last so long. All I could hear was the noise inside of my head. But through practice, I got a little better. I'm not one to tell an individual to do this just how this is, because we're talking about, number one, gaining a relationship with a God of your understanding, learning how to say your prayers that will sustain you, because quite often what might work for me won't work for another individual. I'm not here to run anybody up out of this room by espousing something that I know nothing of. What I do know is that when I pray for God's will and I allow Him to work in my life continues to get better. I don't pray for specific things because what I do in praying for specific things, because I'm whimsical and I might fathom and figure that, well, I'm in this dilemma. God, this is what I need to eradicate this situation. And I ask specifically, but every time what I do when I do that, I take away the power of God's love and I cut myself short by asking for specific solutions for specific problems. I can tap into the well of power and keep myself in His hands, and I will experience those things far better than my imagination could conjure up. And there's a temptation to ask for some money on the side. There's temptations to ask for a better job. And anytime that a person keeps asking me, and they keep asking me, say, well, Joe, what does your God do for you? Anytime that I try to come up with an absolute answer for who my God is, how great His power is, then what I'm doing is diminishing really what His power is. As I said, I am one of those persons that have come off of a dirt pile. I got to the point where I isolated because I felt worse than anybody. And in spite of me, I'm still here. I do the very best I can on any individual day. I know given an opportunity to follow Him or follow that other spirit, I choose to follow Him. Because what I've garnered is my absolute proof that my way don't work. It never has. Those things that I tried to fill this hole up with through drugs, sex, schemes, and scams, they never work. Step number one tells me that I'm powerless. The third step is when I make the decision. And then being powerless, understanding like, man, I can't use my will to fix what's wrong with me. In third step, when I've made that decision, everything that is wrong with me will be fixed because of the proper spirit that will fill that hole up that's inside of me. What's important for me is to understand that, like, Joe, you better find out who you are and whom you are. It's real simple today for me to come into a room, open up my mind, and follow a lot of suggestions. I have a sponsor who won't give me a lot of suggestions. Quite often what he gives me is direction. Because he's had some experiences that I haven't had, and he knows the way better. So I thank y'all for allowing me to share my strengths and my experiences. And I think that's enough out of me. Still down, Attic. I want to thank Joe for sharing his experience, strengths, and hopes. And for our next speaker, I'll give you Linda.
Hi, my name is Linda. I'm an addict.
Hey,
good to be here. I enjoy you sharing. I tend to like soft voices, so. Yeah. Oh, wow. I'm really tired. I'll try to stay awake. I don't drink coffee anymore, so it's kind of tough. I was real honored to be able to speak on this step, and it was probably meant to be. I went through and read the step, and it works how and wise. And it says, you know, you need to have that foundation, and you need to have worked all the steps, you know, before you get to the step. And I can say that I've done that. But I've gone through them again, and for about a year, I've been writing, you know, on the 11th step. And so I've been procrastinating, you know, on that. So it was right on time, you know. So much comes to mind, like when I read the step and it works how and why, and when I really just thought about my, like you said, like all I have to share is my experience, you know, with this and my experience in this program. And So many thoughts, so many things just came into my mind. And, you know, I thought about, of course, how I got here. And I've been thinking about that a lot lately, for a lot of different reasons. And I came in through another fellowship in March of 1980. And but I got clean in Narcotics Anonymous in November of 1982, and I have not had the need to go back out since then, and I feel like I need to say that. It's something I feel really passionate about, because I think we need to say that more often around here, because just recently I've just been hearing a lot that relapse is a given, and I just want to say that there's a lot of people that I know, and there's people in this room that they haven't relapsed. They've been clean since they walked in here. It's not to say that you're a bad person if you relapse. I'm just saying that we're not responsible for our disease. We're responsible for our recovery. And this is my life. I mean, this is life or death for me. And so that's how I can put it to you, you know. And all I have is today, just like anybody else. But I earned my seat in here. And when I came in, I had no self-esteem. I hated myself. You know, I thought that everybody else probably did too, you know. I couldn't even look at myself in the mirror, you know. I came in, and because I had come in through another fellowship, and then I really didn't know about NA until somebody mentioned it to me in a meeting, because I was sharing about drugs, and they said, "Have you ever tried NA?" And then I was introduced, you know, and I was home. And so everything that was suggested to me in the beginning, I didn't do. Like when someone said 90 and 90, I thought, what? You know, I was in another fellowship. You know, well, I don't need to do that. 90 and 90, you know. And, you know, just the basic, you know, F you, and, you know, just that kind of attitude, you know. And I, you know, I held on to that, but, you know, but I stayed clean, you know. And then a sponsor appointed herself my sponsor, you know, in NA. You know, I had a sponsor in the other fellowship. You know, I actually picked up the phone and got someone. But so that was an 11th step. That was my higher power. And I did all the things that people said don't do, like get in a relationship, if that's what you want to call it. I mean, we always call it a relationship, but it's not really. You know, it's like a lust ship. You know, really. I mean, it is. You know, and we call it a relationship. I didn't know anything about relationships. I don't know about you all, but, you know, I you know. And so, but that's very real, because it's that self-esteem issue, and for me, you know, to keep religion separate, it's like, you know, I knew who my higher power was. I mean, I didn't have a problem with that. That wasn't the issue. So that's just me. I grew up a Southern Baptist. I was baptized in the Baptist church. So I won't say too much about that, but that always stayed with me, and it's still with me, and I know what I believe. You know, it's changed a lot by this fellowship. But what happened was, what I hear some of my friends talk about and other people in these rooms is that separation. You know, it's like the drugs and the alcohol separated me from having, you know, that conscious contact, from having that, like Joe said, personal relationship. And I never had it, you know, in that way. And I didn't know how to have that. And so I say that because, you know, I used other things, you know, if you want to say recovery, in the early years, you know, to fill that void, you know, which was really seeking that personal relationship with God, you know, and it was sex, and, you know, it was thinking that I had to dress up the outside to let the outside look good, but it didn't matter. You know, I didn't want you to know how I felt on the inside, but as long as I look good on the outside, all of that stuff, you know. And so, but if you choose to do that route in recovery, there's a lot of pain involved, you know. And I had a lot of that, you know, but it brought me closer to my higher power, who I choose to call God. And I will say that nothing breaks your heart more than being clean and falling in love for the first time. And you just know that it is, you know, and whatever sickness the two of you bring into it or whatever, you know, the love is there, you know. And it hurts so terribly, terribly much, you know, to realize that this is not going anywhere. You know, this, I can't do this anymore. You know, I've got to get out of this. And then go back and forth about 10, 20 times, you know. And it hurts so much. You know, and my higher power, you know, it's like, would intervene. You know, it's like, I would go off and I would go travel to where this person was and, you know, go to meetings there and stay for the weekend. And then all my other friends would call me on it. And where have you been? And you know, it's really not a good thing to do in early recovery, you know. And I remember one time, you know, coming back from one of the breakups and this is true. I mean, I remember calling about 10 people and nobody was home. And the least likely person, who I saw here tonight, but the least likely person that I thought would help me, you know, really, he answered the phone on the 10th ring, you know, and he came over and you know, and picked me up and we went to a meeting and, you know, and it was great. And so finally with that, you know, I just came to a point where, you know, it's just, you want to get out of it, but you're obsessed. It's just this obsession that you have. And you don't really know any other way, you know. So finally, I just remember, and this was 3.5 years clean for me. And I just remember, like, getting on my knees, and I just said, God, please take this away from me. Please help me take this obsession away from me. And because really it was either do that or I'm going to use. And so what I was told to do, you know, by my sponsor was to do that, get on my knees every morning and ask for this obsession, you know, with this person, with this compulsion, or this, that I felt that I had to be with this person, you know, to be removed. And I did that, and I did it every morning, and, you know, it was really hard. But I did it, and so what happened with all of that is I got closer to the program, you know, and I got closer to God. And that's when I started working, about 3.5 years. I mean, that's when I started, you know, in desperation, you know, doing service work. And it's like after 6 months, you know, I started to feel better. And it started to lessen. And then I met all these beautiful friends, you know, and I was doing service work, you know, and started to go out and have fun, you know, do some fun things, you know, things I'd never done before, you know. So, and I can't, you know, to be honest, I can't say it really ended there. I mean, the relationship ended, but just those thoughts and feelings stayed, you know, for a very long time, you know, but through working the steps and just the fellowship and my higher power, you know, it helped me through. And I would say that was like the first big hurdle for me, you know, in recovery and growing closer to God. And I guess it's really important to say that, just to say, like, look, you know, I can put my faith in God. You know, I can think that this is the best thing for me, and I can just turn it over to God and put it in God's hands. And it was great. I mean, and I remember that fourth anniversary, and I remember that I got it, that other people really cared about me, you know, that they really saw something in me, you know, that I was a giver, that I wasn't a taker. And I just can't tell you how that made me feel, you know, to sit in that room and have that feeling. And to be alone, you know, to be with me. And so, you know, I went through a lot of different things, and I remember feeling, because I had dropped out of college, you know, I remember feeling, and because I was told all my life that I was a failure, you know, unfortunately I was told those things, you know, by my father, you know, that I was stupid and all of that, and that hurts. That stays with you, you know, for a long time. And so it was like that self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, I just said, I lived it out, you know, and I didn't feel that I was capable, you know, of succeeding, you know. So I remember, once again, you know, being in pain with what I was doing and knowing that in my heart I had something else to offer. And I remember one day, not that I would recommend this to anybody, but I just remember I really did have faith. And I remember, and it's just those situations that start happening in your life that you realize that you can start putting more faith in your higher power, you know, and not in myself. And I remember being at this job, and I remember my boss getting on me about being a minute late, and I was just so miserable in what I was doing. And I remember calling somebody in the program and said, you know, I'm going to walk out of here. I'm just going to pack my things up and I'm out of here. And they go, do it. You know, like that was real responsible. And he's still clean today. But and I did. It's like I packed. I just like threw the key on my boss's desk and wrote a note. And I packed everything in my car. And I came home. And of course I thought, what the hell did I do? Just left my job, you know. I just bought a new car like a year ago, you know. But I can't explain it to you. I just felt like everything's going to be all right. And it was all right. And it wasn't easy in the beginning because I didn't know what was going to happen, but it worked out. So I got the opportunity to go back to school, and I found out that I wasn't stupid, you know. I wasn't a genius, but I wasn't stupid, you know. And that was a miracle. I mean, that was putting faith, you know, in my higher power. I did that, and then all the time in between, a lot of time before that and all around, you know, I just had a lot of dead end relationships, whether they were 1 week, 2 weeks, one night, you know, all of that. And I would always think, oh, this is the one. This is the one. I know this is the one. And I always felt this way. Every single person, I felt this is the one. And, but all the time, and I, once again, it's like, I had that faith. I just felt like I would just pray and I'd just be like, I know it, God. I know you've got somebody in mind for me. I just know you do. And I would just, no matter how hurt or just how wounded I felt, I would just pick myself up and I would go on. And that was quite some time, you know. And then at 32, I met my husband-to-be, you know, in these rooms. And at 34, you know, I got married, you know, for the first time. And yeah, he's the love of my life. And every day, you know, I feel that. We've been through a lot together. And I'm just so grateful, you know, to have him in my life. So my wedding day, you know, was a miracle. You know, wedding day. That was a miracle. And then September of 93, my dad was diagnosed with lung cancer. And if anybody's lost a parent, then you understand how that feels. Your life is never the same, and there is a part of you that dies with your parent. I mean, your life goes on, you know, but it was really hard for me going through that to find people in these rooms that could truly understand how I felt. And it's still very painful for me. I miss him so terribly much. And even though I hated him at one point in my recovery, I hated him, you know, for the physical abuse and the verbal abuse, you know, through the steps, I worked through that. And I prayed to God that he would give me an opportunity to be with him, you know, before he died. And I got that opportunity. And my dad, you know, as he was like in hospice and he was laying there, he told me that he loved me. And he never said that to me. And I can't begin to tell you what a precious moment that was in my life to be sitting there in a rocking chair, looking out. He's laying there and he's telling me how proud he is of me. And that he loves me. And I had that chance. And I never thought that we were going to work things out. You know, but that's my God. I mean, that's having faith, you know, in the program. And I lost my grandmother in this program, too. I heard someone share that tonight or earlier. And those were two profound moments, you know, in my life. Because those two people in their own ways were very influential in my life. My grandmother, for her deep, deep faith, you know, and I used to spend summers with her, you know, in North Carolina, and I was the first grandchild, you know, I got to be special, you know, and she thought I was special, and I always knew I had somebody in my family who thought I was special. And I miss her. I miss her a lot. But anyway, what I wanted to say, and I believe that with death, there's rebirth. Because in each of those situations, I had rebirth. With my grandmother, I ended up going back to school. And then when my dad passed away, I ended up going back to school again, if that makes sense to you. But it was like a rebirth, you know, in my life. There's so many people in my life, or so many small situations, you know, like jobs, or there's all those situations, you know, that they're just meant to be, you know. And I wanted to share too that for many years, you know, since we've been married, you know, off and on, you know, I would think about, I don't think I want to have any children, you know, and then at one time, well, I think I do, and then, you know, I was in school again, you know, for 2 years, and that ended in last May. So, and I just turned 41 in February, and I'm proud of that. And because I feel like you're only as young as you feel, you know. And life is not over for me, you know. So, you know, my husband and I, you know, we had been trying to have a baby for about 3 months. The whole temperature thing and all of that. Not very spontaneous. And I did not like that, you know. And, you know, and then it came to a point where my doctor felt that maybe there could be a problem. And he recommended that we go see a fertility specialist, which I always feared, because that's all you hear about anymore. So I made the appointment, and they sent me information, and it's also very expensive. And I got a book about it, and I read everything about it. And this was just recently, and I was sitting in my room, and I looked through it, and I said, you know, God, this isn't for me. I mean, it's okay for somebody else, but this isn't for me. I really said this, and I said, you know, if it's not meant for me to have a child, I will accept that. And we had this conversation, God and I. A few days later, I was pregnant. So there is a God, and there is a God in my life. And I really, you talk about surrender, I surrendered that. That to me, I mean, this, you know, is a miracle, you know. And it's not without its worries, because I worry, you know. But I'm 11 weeks now. And I don't know what's going on with God, but I've been sick, you know, until this weekend. And I was like, thank you, God, you know, because the sun was shining and, you know, my friends are here. And I woke up this morning. It's the first time that I wasn't sick, you know, that I didn't feel like I couldn't get out of bed. I went to bed at 2 and I got up at 7:30. And woke my husband up and said, let's go to the beach. Let's go on the beach, you know. But I just wanted to share those experiences of, you know, my higher power and God, you know, working, you know, in my life. I think Joe was sharing too, it's like, I mean, I still worry and about fear and faith, you know, and I worry every day, you know, about this child. And I have to be really honest about that. But, you know, so far, so good, you know, and we had our first sonogram, and I just think that's so awesome, you know, to be laying there and you see your child, you know, up there on the screen, and, you know, this is our baby. You know, so, and just to see the heartbeat, I wanted to know, is there a heartbeat? Is everything okay? You know, and that's just where I'm at, you know. But I've talked to other mothers, and they've told me that I'll worry for the rest of my life. So, and I'm scared. I'm really scared, because I have a lot of friends in this program who have kids, and you know, it's not easy. So, yes, I'm scared. So I'm not going into it, you know, blindly. I put a lot of thought into this, and I guess God did too. So, but that's really what I wanted to share, how much I love this program, and how much I love my higher power, you know. And also when we talk about that close relationship, you know, personal relationship, really it's like through you all, you know, it's become even closer, because when I go into a meeting, I do listen, you know, I listen to what people are saying, and, you know, I'll get my message. And I also, you know, relied on God at lonely times, you know, in my life, like transitions, moves, changing of friends. You know, and I just hear this a lot lately, and I just have to share. I mean, if you keep coming back, you know, you just hear, you can get a negative attitude, you know, about meetings, and I'm tired of hearing the same people share the same thing all the time, and I've been through that. And there was a period of time when I was down in Richmond for 5 years. We just moved back in June, and I remember calling my sponsor and saying, "I'm going to church only." And she's like, "No, you're not." And I'm like, "Okay." So, I mean, in other words, I have no other place to go. I mean, this is my life. You know, you all are my life. And, you know, we're going to have moments when we're going to be irritated with each other, or you don't want to go to the same meeting. But I've been there so many different times. I can't, because I have to keep coming back, you know, and I just know that people that I've known in this program that don't come back to meetings, they don't stay clean. And being clean and not going to meetings does not equal recovery. And, you know, I just think that we need to talk about that more often, about when you say working a program, what are you talking about? In working a program, are you going to meetings? Do you have a sponsor? Are you working steps? Are you doing service work? You know, and I'm back in doing service work, you know, and I'm really happy about that, because I had been in school, and that's a big commitment. And I think that's a great way to get in touch with your higher power. You know, like today, you know, I helped out with the, I hate that word indigent, by the way, but I helped out with the H&I desk, you know, and helping people that, you know, couldn't afford packages, you know. And that was so rewarding to me. I mean, that was so rewarding. And, you know, going to area service, you know, every month, and, you know, because I had been away from that for a while, so I like it. You know, it's like I don't mind if people are arguing or disagreeing, and you know, I that's okay with me. You know, and I like it, because you know, just recently there's just been some times when I just haven't felt good, and just to go, you know, and see my friends there, you know, and you have this common bond because you're doing service work together. And so that's you know, what I wanted to share, you know, is just my experience and how that has brought me closer, you know, to my God. And really it's just an ongoing process. And thanks for letting me share.
I'm still down in the attic. I want to thank Joe and Linda for sharing their experience and strips on the 11th step. We have about 15 minutes left, and I want to briefly touch on the meditation part of the 11th step. As I was sitting there listening to both of them, I was reflecting back on the times when I did a lot of meditation and was sorting through some things and trying to really get a God of my understanding. And, you know, thank God I came here to atheist and agnostic, because see, if I didn't see it, if I wasn't able to touch it, I didn't believe it. You know, and y'all good folks that told me, and my good sponsors told me, that I came in here on the third step, and that the 11th step will keep me here, providing that I sought him out and I understand him. So I'm briefly going to get myself out of the way, and the meeting is open for us to share for the next 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah. Hi,
Darlene. Hi, fam. I'm Francine, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Francine.
You know, I've always had a problem with self-acceptance and being accepted by people that I care about. I've learned today, and I've tried to reiterate this, and I'm getting it more and more every day. And I thank God for today, for this moment right now, I have to be all right with me. With the program that I work, the God that I serve, and the way I live my life, I need the people in my life either to accept me, you know. So often I've changed, and I've tried to be what other people wanted me to be accepted. When I like a person, and I need people in my life, they find out who I am, they want to back off, because I'm this, or I'm that, or I'm that. And that hurts. But I'm so tired of changing to be accepted by people and pleasing people. What about Francine sometime? You know, I act like I'm happy-go-lucky all the time, but I really do. I have feelings too. You know, and it's very important to me today to keep on trying to be the person I can be, because I went through a couple of changes this weekend and in weeks before this, you know, just trying to make everything all right for everybody else. You know, I've had a very, very, very nice weekend, and I've had a revelation that I'm all right with who I am. I really am. I'm loud. I like to have fun, and I love people. I'm all right with that. I really am today. You know, and then I've enjoyed this workshop so much. I've seen so many people. You know how when you're out there on the strip, 95 pounds, walking up and down, I got that shuffle because your feet hurt from one block to the next block, and you leave your friends out there or people that you've used with to come into these rooms or jail or whatever gets you up in here. Then you see them in places like this, looking good, smelling good. It does something to me so deep. So it's such a feeling. You know, and that's why I will continue to come to these conventions, because I get such a feeling, you know. And that's what I live for, those type of feelings, that love, that God is good. God is good. You know, and you see these people, and then they see you, and the last time they saw you, you know, you was 95 pounds, hair coming out three shades darker, that suck, like the permanent suck on a pipe, face sucked in. Then you walk around looking good, feeling good. You got in a, it's good. God is good. I am so, so thankful. I am so thankful for stepping out today, getting to know Francine, what Francine likes, what's tolerated, what's not tolerated. It's hard to cut off, and it's hard to start over. But I know with God in my life, and if I continue to do the right thing and don't use today, I'll be all right. You know, I recently relapsed about 5 months ago, and it had a lot to do with me not sharing, not being real honest to people about where I was at, because I cared so much about what you thought of me. I had it going on, and I talked real good. But I was all messed up. All messed up trying to please mommy, trying to please the man. You know, today it's about Francine. And they tell me it's a selfish program. I have just realized that. That it really, really is. It really, really is. And if I'm all right, then people around me are going to be all right. Because if I'm not all right, there's always going to be a lot of turmoil. You know, and I just wanted to share that. For me, today. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks
for
sharing.
And I enjoy both of
you. I'm Scott, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Scott. I'm
very grateful to be here. I remember when we were working on It Works How and Why, and I ended up going with three other addicts to Chicago. And when I got there, right, I was literature chairman for, actually I was the assistant literature chairman for Norvana. And they had a 17-year-old lit chair. And I ran against him and I lost. So they made me vice chair. And I was a watchdog. I wanted to make sure he was doing everything right. So we did a lot of stuff together. But I felt very, very privileged, right, when I got to Chicago that they asked me to chair the 11th step. And I hadn't worked it yet. And that's a reality, but I was a very, very good sergeant at arms. I could keep everybody in order. And that's what I did. And it worked out great, and I learned a lot about the 11th step. What was amazing is I had a brand new vehicle when we went there. You talk about having a little faith. I had this 16-year-old or 17-year-old kid with me who had just got his license, and he learned how to drive a stick shift on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. That's faith. That's belief. But we got there, and it was hot. And You know, I learned a lot. But when I got back, it was kind of funny. I decided, well, shoot, I better start learning about this. So I went out and bought some tapes on how to meditate. You know, and this one tape, it was kind of funny. It had this one particular meditation, right, that you pretend like you're at the bottom of a lake or a pond. And being a scuba diver that I was, you know, I could breathe perfectly fine down there. It was okay. But what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to take all your thoughts and you put them in a bubble and you let them drift away slowly. And I was doing this. And all of a sudden, I got this bright blue flash. I don't know where it came from. It was just bright blue and it was awesome. And I said, God, this bubble's for you. Sounds like a beer commercial, doesn't it? And this one, too. You know, I started giving God bubbles. Then some more thoughts came to my head. You know, and then I gave him some more bubbles. Well, as I said, I had this brand new vehicle. It had probably, by then, it had about 2,000 miles on it. And about 2 days later, I'm going down the road in the slow lane, and I decided to go over to the fast lane. So I kind of zipped behind this van. And somebody decided to pull a U-turn where there was no U-turn spot. It was an old couple, you know, and they kind of turned. And anyway, we all locked them up. And I remember going, oh, my God. And I'm looking at the car in front of me, getting as close as I can without hitting it, and watching the mirror behind me. And this guy is right behind me. Anyway, we all locked them up. There's about four of us. And we all got sideways and everything else, and we all stopped. And most people got out of their, well, I think everybody got out of their vehicle. And some people were given the old couple, you know, a few fine gestures, you know. And anyway, I just remember looking, you know, at the car in front of me, and there was not an inch between me and the car in front of me. And there was even less in the car behind me. And I remember getting back in my car and saying, God, I got to give you some more bubbles. You know? That's the way it works in my life today, you know. That's just one of thousands of miracles that have happened in my life, you know. And I just remember that one because I just gotten back from the 11th step. Anyway, thanks for letting me share.
Thanks.
Nice to talk loud enough. I gotta get up there. Take too much time. My name's John Ray, and I'm definitely an addict. Seven step prayer and meditation. I do it every morning now with my dog. Go out on the front porch, and I sit down, and the dog wants to play with the ball, so he dropped the ball at my feet. And I take the ball and I throw it as far as I can. And while he's going to hit the ball, I start talking to God. Let go of all the stuff that I know I have a problem with. Like the people that want to wait till they get to the street they're going to turn in before they put the signal light on. And I can be in the other lane if you give me a signal that you're going to make a turn. And I can keep on going. And usually that's when I start cussing. But I start praying at that point now. Because the same thing happens every day. Them people are going to do what they want to do, and I don't have no control over it. But in the process of me giving God that little stuff like that, like when my boss is talking to me and giving me the whatever, not to say nothing back. Just say to myself that he's the boss. You got it right. He paying me to take his shit. And I said, man, he paying me to do his shit. And I've been giving God this stuff in the morning. And then when the dog come back, I get to go inside. And all this, I'm smoking a cigarette too. I need to say, I still got a lot of addictions that I ain't got rid of and ain't willing to work on yet. I believe when they put me in the casket, I'd be saying, give me a life. I go in the house and I make that first cup of coffee and I come back after praying now and I sit there, me and the dog. And I listen for God to give me some answers about how my day is going to be and what's going to happen. Now, it says in the literature that for prayer and meditation to be effective, we have to do it on a regular basis. I've been doing it a pretty good little while, man. And some things are coming out of prayer and meditation. Some things like, some spiritual principles like, that I don't know nothing about. Happy. joyous and free. Happy that I ain't got to use. Joyous that I ain't causing nobody no pain today. And free. I'd have been up and down the road 2 times on this weekend coming here. I took to take a newcomer home yesterday. And I put 500 miles on my car. And this, since Friday, since I got off Friday, I put 500 miles. I know I got to get $2,000 out of it now when I get ready to sell it. I was going to let it go for $1,500. This car runs good as shit. The car is raring to go. But I'm tired. And these kind of things, you know, like, I never used to pray. I used to pray like when I get in a bind, man. Like when that guy had a 45 pointed at my head and he said, I'm going to kill you. And I said, man, you know, I'm all right with you killing me. I said, just tell me what I did before you pull the trigger. And he said, not you, the guy behind you. I grabbed the money and I dived to the floor because I was in the crap house and I was winning. I shouldn't have been there anyway. But God has been with me a long time, man. And a lot of times I look around the rooms, man, and I don't know, people say they had friends in their addiction. I don't know whether they were friends or not, but I miss a lot of the people I use with, man. I come in here, man, and I see very few people with gray hair. It's good to see somebody with gray hair.
Good to be here.
Yeah.
That's right.
Whoa, man. Right. They don't know how good it is for us to be here. That over 50 group,
that's right.
Man, we come through a whole lot more pain, man. See, you know, when I talk about a cooker and some dope today, people don't even know what I'm talking about. But they don't know I smoke crack too, and I'm pulling on that glass pipe too. And today, man, I ain't got to live like that. And through regular prayer and meditation, I'm not in pain as often, and when I am in pain, it's not as intense.
That's right.
And I didn't come here to memorize no literature, man. I came in winning the detox because the rent was due and I didn't want to face the landlady. And I've been here ever since. So that truly lets me know that there is a God, and boy, he been blessing me. No joke. I want to say my ass. But I still trust. I do it a lot of times just to see how many people are going to look at your funny. This program works, man. And I believe it could work for an old dope fiend like me. It worked for anybody. All I did was keep coming back. And man, I used to hate it when they told me that. I still ain't think I'm stupid. To come here and see y'all with the gold, keeping money. I didn't ever keep no money, no gold when I was using.
That's right.
I get broke every time I try to use.
That's right.
And then coming in, I didn't know what y'all was doing. But I said, whatever they're doing is better than what I was doing, and I want to find out about that. When they said, keep coming back, I said, they think I ain't coming back. I will be back. And now, I ain't going nowhere, man. They say I share too long, and I share too much, but most of the time I'll be talking about me. And I learned how to do that from y'all, man. It's equal amounts of God in the program. And that's what I'm doing today, man. Equal amounts of God in the program. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Sheriff.
I want to thank everybody, man. Somebody please bless us for today.
Praise be to Adam. Praise be to God. Study stuff.